The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The Russian military has begun a brutal assault on the people of Ukraine. Without provocation, without justification, without necessity, this is a premeditated attack. Vladimir Putin has been planning this for months, as we've been saying all along. He rejected every good faith effort the United States and our allies and partners made to address our mutual security concerns through dialogue to avoid needless conflict and avert human suffering.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon, my fellow Americans. It is good to be with you. I'm Drew Mariani. Boy, startling news, wasn't it, this morning as you woke up to headlines and we saw that Russian forces have invaded Ukraine. Now, did not come as a surprise to me. We know that U.S. intelligence was well aware of what Vladimir Putin had intended. You don't amass an army of nearly 200,000 troops on your neighbor's border just for military exercises. You don't bring in blood and set up medical tents just for military exercises, as Vladimir Putin had claimed. No, we're not going to invade. This is just an exercise, right? Well, of course, they looked for a reason. The U.S., I thought, was very brilliant, very clever in exposing Vladimir Putin's move, releasing declassified information, showing the military buildups and what the intentions are. So he needed something. He needed a false flag. He needed a reason to go in and take over Ukraine. His justification to the people of Russia for the invasion, it's amazing. He's claiming that Ukraine was trying to get a nuclear weapon. He's claiming that Ukraine was going to invade Russia and use chemical weapons. He's claiming that the operation to demilitarize and denazify, how about that word, huh? He used the word denazify Ukraine. And that we'll be pulling out when they're done. We know that's not the case. The invasion is overwhelming. The maps show strikes across the country. The number of casualties right now is unknown. And the city of Chernobyl, you probably will remember that. Chernobyl is the site of that world-famous incident where a nuclear reactor almost melted down. In fact, it was the site of the world's worst nuclear reactor. It's a nuclear disaster. It has been seized. Putin's making very clear threats against the U.S. and its allies. I'll share with you a little bit of what he said and throughout the day today, just to give you some perspective. There's lots of news outlets there you can get your information from. I'm delighted you're with me today. I'm going to bring to you experts, and of course, we're going to take a moral look at all of this. The Holy Father calling the world to fast. I'll tell you what he's inviting, and I'll take a look at some approved prophecy, like those from the Fatima seers, and we'll give you a broad look at what this might mean. Also, what it means for you economically, as you've been probably watching, the markets have really taken a beating today. I know gas prices are going to go up a little bit later. We'll bring to you a financial expert to let you know where all this is coming. So I'll try to give you a 360 look and, above all, a moral perspective on the issue. It's good to have you with us today. You know what disturbed me, and I'm sure it disturbs you, and I know it has really also pressed a button of a lot of media as well. Putin is making it very clear, not only to the U.S., but to his allies, that if anyone from the outside interferes with what's going on, that you will face consequences greater than any you have faced in history. What does that mean? It's not just cyber attack. I mean, a lot of experts today think he's talking about using a nuclear weapon. Here's what Putin said in an address after the invasion began. Listen.
We urge you to lay down arms immediately and go home. I will explain. All servicemen of the Ukrainian army who comply with this requirement could freely leave the area of military actions and return to their families. Whoever would try to stop us and create further threats to our country, to our people, should know that Russia's response will be immediate and lead you to such consequences that you have never faced in your history. We are ready for any outcome.
So, you know what I found strange is Emmanuel Macron, who's the president of France, he was making visits back and forth to Russia, trying to be an intermediary between, you know, some of the European nations and usher peace or begin dialogue, find a diplomatic off-ramp to this escalating problem. The one thing that he said through all of this really struck me. He says, you know, he's been around Vladimir Putin many times, but there was something different about Vladimir, something very different about him. And I don't know what that is. You know, when I hear that type of thing, sometimes you can sense a change. And I don't want to go so far as saying that there's something demonic there. There clearly could be. I mean, there's no doubt. I often think, maybe later today or in the days ahead, I'll talk to you a little bit about, or talk with you a little bit about what some exorcists have said. I mean, wouldn't Satan love to possess a world leader, huh? But clearly he's out not just to build the USSR, but something much broader. And this is a hallmark moment for him. I'll be surprised if he stops at the Ukrainian borders, but we'll see. That's why we're called to pray. And that's why I've been saying that for over a week. I've been saying, in fact, longer than that. I've been asking you to offer small sacrifices, penance, to pray, especially the chaplet and especially the rosary. These are the weapons that heaven has really given us in this particular time. And I'm not saying this to you for any personal credit, it's just something that I want to encourage you to do. I really believe it's important for us to offer our sacrifices. You know, I make small ones, you know, and I make some big ones. I mean, fasting's a big one. But say you want a little sweetener in your coffee, offer that up. Have that coffee black. Maybe you'd hate it that way. It'd be a sacrifice, right? You know, maybe you can turn the TV off for half an hour. You know, maybe there's lots of little ways you can sacrifice the things that you enjoy for the greater good. Unite it to that of the Lord on the cross and pray. And, of course, allow that to become meritorious. You know, Vladimir Putin saying you'll face consequences greater than any you have faced in history. Your nation has ever seen. In all revelations and decisions have been taken. I hope you hear me, he says. It's a warning. I think cyber attack is one thing, and we could certainly handle that. But don't forget the capabilities of the USSR right now with hypersonic weapons, with nuclear demonstrations. Would they use nuclear weaponry? And one general who I heard a little bit earlier today was indicating he thought that could indeed be the case. I'm not here to scare you. I really am not. I believe prayer changes things, and we can certainly pray. I think about divine protection in places like San Giovanni Rotondo, where bombs have been dropped and never detonated during the war. You know, I think there was a divine protection in a place called Medjugorje. Similar accounts took place during the Bosnian War that took place there. I mean, God has a way of divinely protecting. We have to put our trust in him. We have to pray. I'm not going to fear. I'm just going to pray more. I am, and I want to invite you to do the same thing. I want you to fast today, to sacrifice today, to ask God for his mercy today, that we can find a way out of this situation. If you watch too much of the media, you're going to get overwhelmed. You really are. I mean, it's fascinating. You can watch it from, you know, 6 a.m. to 12 a.m. in the morning. You can watch it right around the clock practically, right? And it's always changing. You're always hearing new commentary. You don't know what's happening. But it also can create uncertainty, anxiety, and fear. And I don't always think that that's healthy. You know, Putin, though, even though he's doing this, and one commentator said this, and I thought this was a great insight. In a few moments, we'll bring some of our own on. The Russian people are going to suffer as a result of this. And they woke up today to find out that Vladimir Putin has, you know, it's dropping bombs on their neighbors, their cousins, their family members, the Ukrainians, right? And he might be facing troubles right now at home. The Wall Street Journal reported that Russians actually took to the street today in protest against their country's invasion of Ukraine. They went out, they defied an ongoing crackdown on political opposition that has seen almost anyone who's led it. If you're a prominent activist, you are jailed or you are driven into exile. And they reported that thousands demonstrated across the country at rallies. They denounced the military operations, and other outlets are, of course, reporting that hundreds of arrests have been made against what Russian officials now are calling treasonous protest, right? Treason. You know, we take, you know, just one other note here. As an American, we take our freedoms for granted, don't we? We really do. We have our Constitution. We have a right to protest here, you know, we have a right to We've got freedoms that most countries don't have. I mean, look what's happening here. You go out, you're going to be jailed. You're going to be beaten. You're going to be arrested. You're going to be called a traitor. You're going to be charged with treason for taking to the street and voicing your opposition to something that you conscientiously object to. That's what's happening. That's what happens in China. That's what happened in Russia as well. You know, Russia chaired the most recent UN Security Council. And let me share that. Take a listen to what Ukraine's UN ambassador had to say to the Russian chair.
Well, as I said, relinquish your duties as a chair. Call Putin, call Lavrov to stop aggression. And I welcome the decision of some members of this council to meet as soon as possible to consider the necessary decision that would condemn the aggression that you launch on my people. There is no purgatory for war criminals. They go straight to hell, Ambassador.
Oh, that's a bold statement, huh? There's no purgatory for war criminals. I mean, thank God for the mercy of God, that's for sure. We need to pray for the Ukraine. The Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, he was lamenting today on what it takes, you know, well, what's now unfolding in Ukraine. I think the world was shocked by what they're saying. And he came out, he said, look, wisdom is needed. That's what's going to save the world. You know, it's going to save it from the folly of war. John Paul II, he said something very similar. John Paul II had such a great quote. He said, what was it? He said, war. War is always a defeat for humanity. It really is. Listen to this. Listen to this from the Vatican Secretary of State.
The tragic scenarios that everyone feared are becoming a reality. Yet there is still time for goodwill. There is still room for negotiation. There is still a place for the exercise of wisdom that can prevent the predominance of partisan interest, safeguard the legitimate aspirations of everyone, and spare the world from the folly and horrors of war. As believers, we do not lose hope for a glimmer of conscience on the part of those who hold in their hands the fortunes of the world. And we continue to pray and fast, as we shall do this coming Ash Wednesday, for peace in Ukraine and in the entire world.
Yeah, and I don't know whether you're aware of that or not, just from a spiritual perspective. And I think we should start doing it today. The Pope, during a general audience just the other day, he made a very heartfelt appeal for peace in the Ukraine. And he says that the threat of war has caused not only a great pain in my heart, and he says, but this is an increasingly alarming scenario that's opening up. A lot of the people of the world, he says, are going to be feeling anguish and they're going to feel pain. He said, once again, the peace of all is threatened by partisan interests, he says, with political responsibility to examine their consciences seriously before God, who is the God of peace and not of war, who is the Father of all, not just some, who wants us to be brothers, not enemies. Wouldn't it be nice if we looked at each other as brothers? Huh? Wouldn't that be nice? And I love that. God is a God of peace. He's not a God of war. So what did he do? He says, I am encouraging you. He wants you, believers, he says, in a very special way, to dedicate yourself intensely to prayer and fasting on the 2nd of March. That's Ash Wednesday. It is a day of fasting within the church. He wants to make it a day of fasting for peace. And I will talk a little bit more about this maybe tomorrow and definitely in the days ahead to go ahead and give you perspective on how important fasting actually is. It amplifies your prayer. It works miracles. I am telling you, it will work miracles. And I really hope that you will get your family, your spouse. I hope you personally will commit to at least, if not today, if not in the days ahead, especially on Ash Wednesday, to respond to the call of the Holy Father. And imagine if a billion Catholics, imagine if more than that, imagine if citizens of the world, people of goodwill, took on this noble cause of prayer, petitioning God, and then fasting on that day. I'll tell you, militaries would disappear. Miracles would happen. More would be accomplished in one day of our prayer and fasting than years of waged war and diplomatic talks. Trust me on that. Trust me on that. In fact, you know, a little bit later today, I'm going to be joined by a priest. And I hope you'll stay with me throughout the day. As I said, I want to give you a little bit of a different look on the events that are now unfolding. I want to take a look at what the Virgin said in 1917, before Russia ever rose to power, what she warned of and what is yet to come. So we've got a lot to talk about today. One final note, and then Dr. Daniel Kempton will be joining me here, and we'll bring him on. If you want to join the conversation too, feel free to call in. You can get in at 888-914-9149. In fact, let me take a short break here. When we come back, I'll share a little bit more of what the president had to say and fill you in on these increasing and unfolding events. Stay with us. We're back with Dr. Kempton and more conversation right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, hold on and let's pray. Have hope. Don't fear. We'll get through this. There's no doubt about it. The world is watching as Russia today began a full-scale invasion of its neighbor in the Ukraine. They attacked Ukraine, I should say, and didn't come as a shock to U.S. leaders. President Vladimir Putin, of course, claimed he was not going to invade. These were military exercises. And yet we saw what happened. As a result of it, as Americans, we're going to feel the pinch. There's no doubt about it. Poll numbers say that they really don't want us to get involved. That's the latest polling that I'd seen. That may change in the days ahead. But oil surged above $105 a barrel. Natural gas was up. Gold, aluminum, copper, nickel, all those. Food prices also spiked. But the big story, too, is what happened in Russia. As a result of these sanctions that were put in, as a result of what Vladimir Putin has done, Russia's ruble, that's their currency, it dropped to a record low, and its stock market plunged as much as 45%, wiping out more than a quarter of a billion, a quarter of a trillion dollars in value in just a stroke. The greatest dip it's seen in its history, President Biden was saying during his national offense there. Of course, President Biden, when he addressed the nation, he expressed once again his confidence that financial sanctions against Putin and his political allies, they will have an impact. And not just now, but for years to come, that this was a major mistake on the part of Vladimir Putin. He could not get Russia completely disconnected from the world's financial markets, but he said no troops will go into Ukraine, so no U.S. boots are going to be in that part of the world. They're going to be backing our allies in the Baltic Sea and Latvia and Estonia and Lithuania and Poland, along with Romania. I've invited to join us today a couple guests. First, Dr. Daniel Kempton, who's Vice President of Academic Affairs at Franciscan University in Steubenville. He actually was a Fulbright Scholar at Rhodes University in South Africa, and I believe he taught at Tver State University in Russia. He taught Russian students there. He's an expert on the former Soviet Union, and especially their involvement in Southern Africa. And it's good to have him with us again this afternoon. Dr. Kempton, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Thanks for having me.
I'm delighted. Thanks for coming on such short notice. I know a lot's unfolding here, and I'm grateful. You know Russia. You lived there, I'm assuming, for a while. You've got to fill me in on what's happening here. You know, I was sharing before you came on that the president of France, Emmanuel Macron, when he went to try to mediate between some of the NATO nations, between Europe and Russia, he said there was something different about Vladimir Putin. There was a change in him. He was not the same man. We saw how short-tempered he was earlier in the week when his intelligence, his intelligence expert, I'm losing the word for him right now, was making statements. Has something happened to Vladimir? What do you make? Today, the people of Russia went to the streets. Many of them protested. These people are going to suffer as a result of these actions, not just from the U.S., but by his actions. Paint a picture for us. Let us know what's happening on the Russian side of this equation.
Well, we've known for some time that Putin has been gradually losing political support in Russia itself, and that the opinion polls that we get coming out of Russia have shown a gradual decline in those who actually are pro-Putin. That said, people are afraid to come out against him. Elections are so rigged that it really hasn't mattered in recent elections. So this, I mean, if you're looking for a silver lining in all of this, this could potentially crystallize some of that underlying resentment of Putin. Many Russians, particularly young Russians, want to be a respected part of the civilized world, want to be, I mean, the young Russians I know and those I taught in 2008 when I was a Fulbrighter there really were enthralled with capitalism, believed in democracy. So this could help. It could sort of tear up Russian society a little bit. So I think Putin knows he's taking a risk in such blatant, aggressive foreign policy steps.
I think he's a bright man. There's no question about that. Look what he's done with his constitution. How long has he been able to hold power? I would be surprised he'd overplay his hand. He must be confident that what he's going to do here will be successful. He must look at our administration as if though it's weak and that NATO's fractured. He must not have the same fear of NATO that perhaps he once had. How does he look at both the U.S.? How does he look at NATO? And what about China's role in this? I know China's not a fan of sovereign nations being taken over. It goes against their own ideology. But at the same time, they're somewhat allied.
Yeah, I think, first of all, he looks at the U.S. as a somewhat corrupt and decadent and power in decline. And obviously there's some truth to that. We are, as a percentage of the world's economy, declining. Yeah. Our population growth rate has declined. Yeah. Our economic GDP as a percentage of the world economy has declined. So he tries very much to portray us as a power in decline, although I think he knows we're still the most powerful country in the world. Yeah. I think he knows he's taking a risk here, and that's what I think people are sensing in Putin's personal reaction. This is a big gamble, which is somewhat uncharacteristic of him. It's a gamble, A, because it might not succeed, and B, because it could have very unintended consequences. Yeah. He's not wanting a direct confrontation with the West, and the risk of that is sky high, higher than it's ever been since he seized power.
So why do it? I mean, I don't understand. Why now? I mean, why was Ukraine so important to him? Why did he have to risk everything over a move like this? And then there's concerns about Moldova, Lithuania, Poland. I don't think he'd ever go into a NATO nation, but who knows?
Yeah, I think the timing of it, again, this was not great timing, but he has China's backing, I sense. I mean, from the Chinese perspective, there are similarities between Putin's argument about Ukraine and Russia being one people to their arguments about Taiwan and right. This being one China historically, culturally. But I think he realizes, look, after Afghanistan, it was pretty clear to most of the world that the United States is backbone. For all you might not like about Trump, he was a mercurial figure. Yep. And one never knew what to expect of the United States. One was, Putin would have been fearful of a U.S. overreaction. I think he was pretty confident that President Biden would be a very slow, moderated approach that could be outplayed. And I think that's exactly what's happened.
So, Doctor, I heard a stunning stat this morning. I heard that the economy of Russia, and look at what a giant landmass that is, right? It's a massive nation. The economy of Russia is equivalent to about the economy of the state of Texas. Now, of course, they are huge oil exporters and natural minerals and a lot of other things along those lines. I would assume that in the days ahead, the people of Russia are going to suffer as a result of this. Do you think there'll be any internal uprising or unrest? Because all of this is taking place based on the decision of one man. You know, he had the Duma, you know, support him in this. This is all Vladimir Putin. One man can spark a global conflict, a possible global war. There's threats of nuclear weaponry. What about the people themselves within Russia? Are they tired of him? Do you think there'll be any sort of protest or uprising against what they're now seeing happen?
I think there has been a growing political divide, and I think the younger generations will be most troubled. Keep in mind the people who are modern voters in Russia, many of them were not alive or at least politically active during the Soviet Union. So for them, its collapse was not the same tragedy, and they saw a lot of opportunity in Russia's move to a capitalist economy. I think Putin is taking seriously the economic signs, but keep in mind the price of oil is going to skyrocket. The price of gas is going up. Those are both factors that are going to help Russia in the long term. So it is basically cursed with a single sector economy, raw materials production, gas and oil. And that's the one sector of the economy that is going to continue to boom as a result of this.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah, I've got to ask you two things. One is some of the language. Maybe you can help me better understand it. Putin used the terms that he wants to denazify. Okay, he wants to denazify Ukraine. What does that mean? Help me better understand, you know, the language that he's using there. Then I also want to talk about something else he said.
Yeah, he used a phrase where he referred to demilitarization and denazification. Yep. The Nazi title is one he used before to sort of Russian or to Ukrainian nationalist. So he's comparing the supporters of people like former presidents Yukashenko and Timoshenko, two very nationalistic Ukrainian presidents, and even the current president, he argues they're trying to create this nationalist entity, and that's where he's claiming. And it's a nice way to try and play mind games with the population, saying, hey, we're fighting against this right-wing threat that is there. So I think that's just a slogan that's helpful. The demilitarization, I think, was the effort to say, to give him the justification for bombing lots of facilities, whether or not Russia does a full-scale engagement in Ukraine, takes over Kyiv and the western Ukraine, which we still don't know. I think he's going to want to move those people out of power. He did this before, remember, in 2004, where there was a manipulation of the Ukrainian presidential election, where Yukashenko clearly won, and Yanukovych, a Russian-allied leader, a former leader of Donetsk, actually was put into the presidency. And that's what Putin is trying to repeat, to get a Russian ally as the puppet president of Ukraine.
My guest today is Professor Daniel Kempton. Dr. Kempton lived in Russia, taught in Russia, well aware of the culture that is there. We're taking a look at the latest news that's now unfolding. And I'm going to probably ask every guest this question today, because it really has given me great pause. And it has to do with what Vladimir Putin has said regarding the threat to anybody who will interfere. You know, he is warning against the interference of other nations, and he says the consequences, if you do, will be consequences you've never faced in your history. And this is for anyone who tries to interfere with us. I'm sure that was a message to NATO. I'm sure it was a message to the United States. The question is, Russia is a nuclear power. They have hypersonic missiles as well. Cyber attacks, always a possibility. We're ready for that, and I know we would reciprocate. Would Vladimir Putin go so far if U.S. troops got involved? Because the president, in his address, made it very clear that we're not putting U.S. boots into Ukraine. That's for sure. But if something happened beyond those borders, would Vladimir Putin hesitate to use some sort of nuclear warhead?
Yeah, I think he would hesitate to use nuclear warhead, but I don't think he would hesitate to threaten it. And I think that's what he's implicitly doing here, is trying to, in a war of wills, sometimes the crazier, angrier side wins. And that's what I think we see Putin playing into that scenario, and I do think we will suffer some more cyber attacks in the near future. That will be wide open. What we worry about most, or at least what I worry about most, is that something we did or some incident that occurs in Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Poland, one of our NATO allies will occur and will end up in a war that neither of us actually wants. And exactly. I don't think Putin wants a nuclear war. We don't want a nuclear war. Nobody wanted World War I either, and it still happened.
Yeah, that's so true. Final thought here. What about the Baltics? What about some of the neighboring former satellite countries of Russia? Do you think that he has ambitions to take them as well?
I think he has ambitions to take them, but minimally to neutralize them. So what I expect to happen is he will occupy large parts of Ukraine. Again, I think he will not want to occupy Kiev and West for a long period of time, because that makes him, it's one, as we saw in both Afghanistan and Iraq, it's one thing to take over a country. It's another thing to stay and control it long term. So as soon as he takes over whatever land he designs on it, he's going to be trying to say, okay, now I will be the peacemaker. I'll pull back my forces from X and Y, but you've got to promise not to have NATO forces in these countries. Mm-hmm. That's how he would try and neutralize them. And again, with President Biden, he's made, in the Obama administration, made major concessions to Iran. Yeah. So one can expect them to at least consider that demand from the Putin administration.
Well, Doctor, I have to leave it there. Before I wrap it up, where does it go from here? What do you see happening in the next few days?
Yeah, I'm still not sure what his ultimate target is. I was actually somewhat reassured when he talked about denazification, demilitarization, because that one way to explain the attacks on sites near Lviv and Kiev and in the south is that he's going to invade the whole country. I'm hoping that's not the case. Another way to explain it is he's trying to make Ukraine sort of a weakened power. So I'm hoping that the actual invasion is limited still to the eastern quarter, the eastern third, maybe even the eastern half, and it's not a whole-scale takeover, which raises risks, conflict, lives lost. That's what we have to pray does not happen.
Well, Doctor, thank you for your time. I'm grateful, especially for your insight, and I look forward to talking to you again. We'll do that soon.
Thanks for having me, Drew. God bless.
God bless you. That's Dr. Daniel Kempton. Check him out. You can always find him at the great University of Steubenville there in, I should say, Franciscan University there in Steubenville. He's vice president of academic affairs. And as I said, he taught in Russia. He's a Fulbright scholar. When we come back, our conversation will continue. Stay with me. Relevant Radio runs on horsepower. Your horsepower. Donate any vehicle and keep your station running. Join in with thousands of other listeners who have given their unused vehicles at relevantradio.com/car.
Oh, come behold the works of God, the nations at his feet. He breaks the bow and bends the spear and tells the wars to cease. Oh, mighty one of Israel, you are on our side. We walk by faith in God who burns the chariots with fire.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Lord of hosts, you lead
us. Thanks for joining me. That was Shane. No, who was that? That was Shane and Shane. Yeah, Lord of Hosts. That's great. Rejoin Maggie. Thank you for hard work you do behind the scenes. It's good to be with you today. If you're just joining us, we'll pray the chaplet in about 20 minutes. We'll certainly pray for world peace today. We'll invoke God's great mercy. So you can get in today if you want. Feel free to dial in. Feel free to tell others about that prayer too. Right now, we're talking about the consequences of what war will ultimately bring. We here in America have not seen war in our territory since the early 20th century. I mean, we have no idea what it's like to be invaded by a foreign power, right? Especially on a massive scale that Russia's doing to Ukraine. Can you imagine that? I mean, a lot of the Ukrainian people didn't see it coming. You saw that this morning. That's a nation of 40 million people. A lot of people never thought that would happen. Russia's their neighbor, right? A lot of talk. These are military exercises. I saw footage this morning of five lines of traffic in one direction for as far as the eye could see. People backed up at gas pumps, unable to get the fuel, unable to get a lot of money out to try to get out. They're trying to flee to Poland, to Lithuania. It's a mess. It really is. Tanks rolling into their countries, bombs being dropped. That action is going to leave Ukraine and Europe with a situation that the world has not seen since World War II. Millions of refugees, mass amounts of hunger. There's going to be the destruction of their infrastructure in cities and towns and these beautiful villages, along with all those businesses. So what does that mean? Where does it lead? It's going to mean that people are going to be dependent on the relief efforts, and that's going to be a drag on the world's economy, just not just Europe. So in the meantime, just as one quick follow-up, and Dr. Jeffrey Shaw is going to be joining me, give us some insight on this as well. China, I don't know if you heard this or not, a lot of focus has been on Russia. China today sent 9 warplanes into Taiwanese airspace. Went into Taiwan's air defense base today. So what's Xi Jinping saying to the U.S. and to the rest of the world? I think it's a clear warning to the U.S. If you get involved in any conflict between China and Taiwan, we will respond forcefully. Taiwan chased those planes off, of course, but this comes after China sent, what, about 39, almost 40 planes into the same airspace just over the past month. China warned that, you know, Taiwan and Ukraine, they're different, right? China always has seen Taiwan as being part of China, and they'd only be taking back their territory that was wrongfully taken from them. So it's a little bit different. You know, they're going to take back their nation. What's happening in the world right now? We're having two major superpowers showing aggression. Why is this happening? Dr. Jeffrey Shaw joins me, president of the Alexandria Defense Group and an expert in counterinsurgency warfare. The author, his latest book, The Lost Mandate of Heaven, and you can check him out at alexandriadefense.org. Dr. Shaw, always a delight to have you on the program. Good afternoon.
Oh, thanks, Drew, and thanks for having me.
I'm delighted. I'd love to get your perspective on what we're seeing. We know what's happening in Ukraine. I've talked a little bit about that already. Today, while that is going on, 9 flights, you know, across into Taiwanese airspace, what do you see happening? Is China just doing a little saber rattling? Are they flexing their muscles, making it clear that they're not going to tolerate anyone coming into to Taiwan's aid? Why today? And is there a message in that, or am I reading too much into it?
No, you're not reading too much into it. There is a message, and the message is we've got Russia's back, and they've got ours. So we can, you know, they see Ukraine as inviolable territory for their defense, and so do we see Taiwan. So no, you're not off the mark there at all. And I expect or suspect this agreement between Russia and China happened even before the Olympic Games. And I'm sure Putin secured guarantees from China in purchasing any lost energy revenues he would make in the shortfall from sanctions in Europe. That China would gladly pick up that energy. So yes, you're right. This it is a signal. It's actually quite a, in Chinese terms, it's a very clear signal.
Why do you say that? Why in Chinese terms?
Because they think their natural approach is always to be more subtle, come from the side, but at the same time, they'll make a very straight statement, and the statement there is that airspace is not inviolable. They will certainly do what they have to do when the time comes, and I do believe there will be a time. I'm just not sure if it's right now.
Yeah, well, I think that's another conflict looming at some point in the future. Yeah. We knew things would erupt after the Olympics. I didn't expect Ukraine to be rolled over like that. Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, as you point out, have become strategic allies. I am sure that Vladimir let Xi Jinping know what was going on, maybe when he met at the Olympics before this ever happened. How far do you think that, Stan, you see NATO now beginning to become refortified, if you will, the U.S. vowing, you know, its assurance of protection and U.S. military might. Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin, How far does that alliance extend, and are there areas where one nation or the other does not want to go?
Well, I think that that alliance was probably more tenuous maybe 2 years ago, but after intense negotiations with the U.S. and NATO, that were Russia's demands, which have actually, if you listen to some of your colonels and generals like McGregor, they've been signaling loud on this since almost 30 years, since the breakup of the Soviet Union, based on promises made. I just think it became more deep set in stone almost now, in violation of everything that George F. Kennan said that America should do just before he died in 2005. Right. He said, whatever you do, do not proceed towards Ukraine any further, because there was a State Department undertaking then. Anyway, so this drove the obvious, as he knew, and everybody who knew the strategic history of the region, this drew Russia into China's arms, and I think it's pretty solid now. I think they need each other now.
How far do you think Vladimir Putin's going to go? I mean, China right now is not really the issue. We see Russia. They'll take over Ukraine. There's no question about that. How far will he go? Will he go beyond Ukrainian borders?
No, absolutely not. And in fact, it won't be it temporarily until his main aim, and it all depends on the disposition of Ukrainian forces in Ukraine, what he will do. If there was a bulk of them further in the far east, towards Luhansk and Donetsk, the breakaway republics, he'll try and pinch that off, because it's just an ideal massive, what the Germans would call a Kessel pocket. Move in from the north around Kharkov and come in from the south, Mariupol, and you clip off the bulk of those forces. So that's what he wants to do. What he's always said is that Russia wants Ukraine neutral with no strategic weapons aimed at it. And they're just carrying out what they said. And Western politicians aren't used to that a politician saying exactly what they mean. Yeah. They think,
There's some truth in them. My guest today, Dr. Jeffrey Shaw. I'm for a few more minutes, and then we'll pray the chaplet. So if you want to get in, I'll give you the number. I'll open the phones. I'll take your calls in just a second. The number is 888-914-9149. We're taking a look at unfolding global events and where they might lead and how they might affect you. A couple things that are going on. There are some people, Doctor, who are saying that we have the possibility of World War III going on. I don't know if we're going to see that or not. I don't think Vladimir Putin's that foolish. Like I said, I think he'll probably stop. He won't cross out of Ukraine, but we could be wrong. This can escalate, of course. Two things. Do you think we could see a third world war? I mean, I don't know what's in Vladimir Putin's mind. He's doing things that have surprised the world. And can we as a nation actually handle, NATO and the U.S. will be fighting Russia, but if at the same time, as we were talking about China sees it as an opportunity to go in and take Taiwan back. Can we handle a two-front war, and how big can this thing go?
First of all, no, I do not think it's World War III. I think it's just been a very sort of one of those long-term foolish policies the State Department got locked into, and my understanding of their history, which I've looked at very closely, is that it's like sort of there's this inertia. Once a policy gets in place, it's like the world has to stop before the policy stops, and they just didn't want to let it go. And Russia has warned. At one point, it looked like Putin was literally pulling his hair out in a talk with American reporters in Russia. He said, I don't know how to get through to you people. You don't listen to what we've been saying. He said, so it's not going to go well. But anyway, so no, he does not want a world war. I don't think China does. Remember, it's got its Belt and Road Initiative. The only way something really nasty, even more nasty than what's going on now, happens is if for some reason U.S. or NATO actually interfered with ground or air assets in Ukraine. And as he warned, then you're going to get hit. And I think now maybe people will start taking this man at his word when he says something. Unlike Western leaders, he means it. I've said that before. People need to wake up. You're dealing with not everybody in the world is a prevaricating politician.
All right, let's take a few calls. We only have a couple of minutes. My guest, Dr. Jeffrey Shaw, we're taking a look not only what's happening with the aggression coming out of Russia, China flying military planes into Taiwanese airspace today. The world is an unsettled place, to say it very gently. Lewis is listening to us in Illinois, in Chicago. Hi, Lewis. You're on the air with Dr. Shaw.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that this is a move for China. I think sometimes we overlook them. We knew Putin was going to be in the Ukraine, but now this is China's move. We are weak as a country. We have no leadership. I don't think we have the courage to fight the war. I don't think so. I know many military people, yes, but I think the younger generation is not well equipped for war. And I think that this is China's move because now we've got the U.S. weakness. Two fronts going on at the same time. How will we respond? China's modernized. They got nuclear subs, silent submarines, with nuclear weapons, aircraft carriers, and a lot of things people don't know that they have. And so it will be a tough war.
All right. Doctor, I'll let you respond.
Yeah, well, I Lewis may well be right. China's feeling pretty bold. But there's a positive side to this. Maybe it will force U.S. policymakers. And whenever I think of they talk the swamp in D.C., I always think of Foggy Bottom, which is the nickname for the State Department building, because it is the determiner of policy, and really the military and everything else follows suit. Maybe there will be Americans will demand a review there, because that darn department has led us into one gross silliness after another in recent times. And I don't have to elaborate from Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, you name it. It goes on and on.
Let's move along. Well, I'll take another quick call while we have some time. Jim's in Skokie, Illinois. Jim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. The question I have is, what would happen if we immediately started sending tankers of oil and gas to Europe so that they could make them independent of the Russian pipeline? What would that do to Russia economically?
I think it's a great point. I wish we could. I wish we should be supplying our allies with oil. We know one of the very first things the president did when he took office with his executive pen was shut down the Keystone pipeline and stop drilling in Alaska. Doctor, let's talk about energy. I've had great conversations earlier in the week on energy policy and how critical it is to national security. Go ahead. I'll let you finish.
It's absolutely critical. Good point. And to that end, how long are we going to play power games with pipelines and drilling and fracking and stuff? If I were the U.S., I'd lay down the law with our silly Canadian government up here and say, because we sit upon the world's third largest proven reserves, and you've got a province that just loves to sell everything they've got to the states, and you shut down the Keystone pipeline, because really the lesson here is America's got to shore up its own interests.
That's right.
That's the big overarching lesson, and follow what the founding fathers wanted it to be, not caught up in these foreign entanglements as much, because for one thing, no one can afford them. But it really does need to shore up its own interests with, and believe me, Canada's got the energy, and I think you just need a sober administration that will say, come on, guys, let's get it happening.
Yeah, we were buying oil from Russia, and that Nord Stream pipeline was going to deliver energy to all of Europe.
And from Saudi and from all those horrible states, could be buying it from us.
Yeah,
exactly. We're right over the line.
Doctor, let me do this. I have a couple of moments left. I'm going to be praying the chapel coming up. Just spiritually speaking, what do you think is the next step? What should we as a people be doing? How do we respond to this spiritually?
Pray, the chaplet for divine mercy is a wonderful idea. I pray it every day in these times. I think we've got to ask God, and we've got to ask for sober and awake leadership. These woke power games must go. We're leading ourselves by our own nose. with our own deceit and immorality. Russia isn't doing that. China isn't doing that. We're in this spot. We've done it to ourselves, and we need God's mercy, and we need to repent.
Amen to that. Doctor, thank you for your time. I'm always grateful to have you on the show with me.
You're more than welcome, Drew, and thanks for having me.
Well, Kitch, I'm going to pray right now, so I'll remember your needs along with mine in the chaplain, all right? That's Dr. Jeffrey Shaw. Say a prayer for him as well. When we come back, we will pray the chaplain. I invite you to join me today, especially to pray for world peace, to pray for the conversion of our leaders, and to respond as our Holy Father has asked us to fast. In fact, Ash Wednesday is a fast day within the church. The Holy Father has come out, really asked us to pray for peace and fast on that day for that cause. I can tell you more about that. But I also think of what the Lord told St. Faustina about the lack of peace in the world. I think about what the Virgin told the seers in Fatima. After the Chaplet of Divine Mercy, we'll take a look at that. You know, the Virgin prophesied the rise of atheistic communism in Russia in particular, and talked about how it would spread its evils, how its errors is the word she used, throughout the world. I'll break that all down for you when we're done praying the chaplet. Why not join me now?